Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. Maureen chats with a different guest each week about their sustainability activities and initiatives, from advice on tiny houses to rooftop gardens to wildlife-friendly farming practices. Maureen's guests are passionate individuals who are making a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Kia ora, welcome to Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio, co Maureen Howard Ahau. Now, this week on the show, my guest is Patrick Terrell from Valley Views Glamping, an eco accommodation based on the Waitaki Valley. And I'll be talking to him about the decisions that he and his partner made to make their property a more sustainable venture. But first up on the show, my own thoughts to share. And this week, I want to talk a little bit about how we talk to others and the ways in which we frame things. Now, last week, I went to a public presentation by an ecological economist. And one thing that ecological economists do, or at least some of them do, is to help society measure the benefits of nature in economic terms, with the good intention of putting a high value on nature. Now, nature gets renamed and repurposed as ecosystem services, and the idea is that by identifying the economic value of what nature gives us, more people are able to put a high price on nature itself and not destroy it. Meeting people where they are and using the language that they use is an important and a valuable skill to help get a message across. But it actually comes at a cost when it goes directly against the kinds of intrinsic values that environmentalists are endeavouring to strengthen. For many studies, it shows that extrinsically rewarding values like money and status lie in opposition to intrinsically rewarding values like protection of the environment and living in harmony with nature. So what happens is that as one set of values increases, the opposite values are actually suppressed. So for example, in a psychological study, participants who attended a workshop on energy efficiency initiatives, where they were told that these initiatives would help save them money, afterwards they threw down more rubbish outside the meeting than participants who attended a workshop where the energy efficiency advice was framed within the context of living lightly on the planet. Now, one thing that I'm hopeful about is all the many people who deep down share the values of environmental care, despite us living in a very materialistic world. Our challenge, I think, is to create more opportunities to talk deeply about what really matters to us and the world that we want our children to live in. Now we'll move on to the main part of the show, where I interview a guest each week. And this week my guest is Patrick Terrell, and our topic is glamping and the eco accommodation and initiative that Patrick and his wife have built together in the Waitaki Valley, and where they've set up a glamping business which comprises upmarket luxurious tents and a common lodge for the guests to use. And so in this show, Patrick takes us on a bit of a journey through the decision-making processes that he made to get to an affordable and a largely renewable energy system, to put in a worm-based wastewater system, water gravity-fed from a local stream, and their choice of materials with a lower ecological footprint. My interview with Patrick was recorded at Valley Views Glamping on the 11th of January in 2019.
Our house is totally off the grid, 100%, and we looked at, hey, how can we produce power? We decided that the best option was solar, although we do have an option of hydro as well, but that's a long story why we didn't go that way. And then there's also wind. So we decided to go solar.
Right, right.
And we might go wind as well. That's with the house. So what we did is we transferred that idea into our lodge. Our lodge is 100% solar at this stage, but we might add a little wind turbine to it as well. And we might go hydro as well. I'm not sure. Might have a complete, the three options all in one. Because when you're with solar, you've got to have sun or, reasonably good lights. And some days you don't have that. So you've got to look at other alternatives. What else do you have when there's no sun? You possibly can have wind. And then hydro is constant if you have good flow of water. So have you got
a river then?
We've got a little stream just down below there. And the water that comes into our lodge and into our house is from a spring up in the mountains. And it's fed through, the lodge is fed through a pipe 1.7 kilometres long, and it's very high pressure.
So you had to install that?
I did that myself. Installed it myself. So we got water from a spring that feeds a stream. And then we just piped it down, and then we just fed off to our baths, which are in the forest, and that spring water, and then straight into our lodge. And it goes through just a simple filter. It's not treated, but it's filtered, and it's also tested. It's been lab tested, and we've got to test that every year. Okay, so that's our water supply. From our water supply, we've decided, well, maybe we could do hydro from that. We're not sure yet. We've just got to see what the regulations allow. But solar is working very well. We have in our lodge, the solar is divided into two sections. One is for the lighting, and the other one's for our fridge.
Right.
So the fridge doesn't affect the lighting. So if the fridge gets, overused, then we've still got the lighting.
Okay.
We are thinking of upgrading, and we're looking at Tesla Powerwall battery system.
Right.
It's the most advanced battery system in the world today, but there are other ones out there that are pretty damn good as well. So we've got to look at what energy do we use in our lodge and decide, do we need a Tesla, which is really amazingly potent? I think it's 15 kilowatts storage. I think so. We would never use that. So we thought we might look at LP or National Panasonic.
So what would you use it for if you had this extra energy?
We've got a couple of dishwashers, save us a lot of time. So we use for dishwashers. Some people like using hair dryers, yeah? So different cultures around the world, they love using hair dryers, so we can give them that option. So we can literally upgrade our options for our guests that they can actually have a little bit of a bit of glamping.
Yes, glamping. And are most of the farms around here, are they also doing off-grid stuff?
There is our two neighbours. They're both off the grid. So there's three of us in this area. Otherwise, the rest, they're all on the grid.
So it's kind of the grid just ended, and so you've built, part of it is necessity. You've got to create your own energy.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It was necessity, but we could have sent a power line up here, and this was in 2010, 2011. We got a rough idea what it would cost, about $120,000. So we said, no, that's not an option. We won't do that. So that's why we decided to look at the options of going off the grid. And I mentioned before, our house was our trial, and I never regret it. The house is now about 6 years, somewhere around there. We've been off the grid, and it's the best thing we've ever done. Some people say it doesn't pay. Yes, it does. Ours, within 7 years, we pay the whole system off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't, after that, and we have no bills. So are you
including that, if the equivalent of having to purchase something for $120,000, are you just regarding the cost of purchasing and getting the off-grid and then the equivalent of kilowatt hours that you would have used if you were connected to the grid? Is that the way you're calculating it?
Basically, yes. I mean, we used to live on the grid up in Kirwee, just out of Christchurch, and we got a family of six, four kids and ourselves, and we looked at our average power bill, what we would pay on average. And then we looked at what the total cost was to put our system in our house, $27,000, and you simple sums, you divide that up with you divide the total cost by the total payment you would pay for electricity per month, and you get a simple figure of about 7.5 years based on what we paid. And there's no increase in power, and there is no no increase in power over that time at all. It's just staying with the same price. So if you increase in the power, you probably pay it off a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have read articles and stuff and all that, and they say, it's not worth doing and all that. That's absolute nonsense. It is. I've actually done it myself, and it works. There's no doubt about it. You know, you might have a situation when your city's, you know, like you might be in an apartment block where you can't do it. Well, you know, that's just the way it's all set up.
Yeah. Or if perhaps you were just a single person, a very low user, you know, but that's if you've actually got a family.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, when we set up in a house, what we did is we got a couple little plugs and we plugged it into our system. And we found out what appliances, how much power it uses. We did over 3 months. So we took every single appliance in the house and then we said, okay, how much does this all use? We don't want to change our lifestyle too much. And then we worked out how much total power we would need to be generated from our solar system. So, you know, from our solar power system. And I'll give you an example of what we looked at. We looked at just a two plate electric stove. Up at our house, we put 8 solar panels that run the whole house, okay, with how many batteries? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 batteries, okay. Now, if we put just 2 stovetop elements, just, you know, like an oil stove, 2 of them, we'd have to put 16 on, okay. So what you do is you actually get rid of what uses a huge amount of power. So anything with an element, just throw out the door.
Kettle,
tumble dryers, electric stove, all that, you just throw out the door. Get rid of it.
Do you use gas?
No, we actually have, at home, we have a Rayburn stove. Yeah, in the lodge, we have gas. That is probably the next best option is gas because it is the cleanest fossil fuel you can use. It's, you know, that's just the way it is. Now, we've got to also look at how much time we, you know, I could spend time cutting up timber to have another Rayburn here, and then I'm using a chainsaw to use fossil fuels as well. So you've got to sort of weigh out your time and what equipment you're going to use to actually provide you the tools to create your energy. At home, we use the Rayburn stove because we've got this huge forest here. I don't cut trees down. The trees just literally fall when they have to fall, and we cut them up and use them. So that's how we run our stove at home. So you've really got to look at where you live, what opportunities you have to generate power, and also eliminate the appliances that use a lot of power, and then you can actually live around that. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to do it as far as I'm concerned, and that's what we did. And we're doing it the same in the lodge. So we look at the lodge here where we, you know, where our accommodation is, and, you know, what do we need? What really do we need? We need a fridge, okay? We need something to wash the dishes because we've got a lot of guests coming through. And we need somewhere to cook, and we need lights. Your lights are very, very efficient. So what we need power for is a fridge, or maybe another fridge, you know, 2, maybe 1 for a bar fridge and 1 for a food fridge, and then, and you know, a couple of dishwashers. That's all.
So at the moment, you've got a little dishwasher there. How is it being powered?
We don't use it now because we're waiting. We want to upgrade the system, so we don't use it at all. So we'll wash it all by hand. Mm-hmm. And that takes us about 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. A lot of work. But, yeah, you know, there's a means to an end. You have to go through that. It's like anything in life. You work through it, and then you have a plan of how to actually improve and become more efficient. And we knew that was the case. So we put those dishwashers in because we wanted to put them in because we already had a, you know, kitchen design. So we might as well put them in.
Yeah.
Now then they're ready, plug the things in, and then you work on your power system after that. Okay, so that's the first thing. And the next thing is, how do you generate your power, which we talked about as well. So either hydro, wind, or solar.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a combination of 2 or 3 of them.
And do you mind asking which company you went to for your solar panels?
It's actually a guy in Oamaru, Trent Landhouse. He's a one-man band, and he's really, really excellent. And he actually designed all this in our lodge. He designed the whole system in our lodge.
That's good.
And we told him what we wanted, and then he sat and designed the whole thing. And we were very, very wrapped with him. And I've spoken to Moretti about upgrading, and he says, yep, we'll get into that. And he said he will come and talk to us, and we'll iron it out and decide what we want to do. So that's going to happen in about 5 months, which is May this year, probably May, June, somewhere around there.
You'll be ready for the next summer season.
Yeah, we'll be ready for the next summer. And then we'll be able to sit and relax because we won't be doing dishes so much.
Yeah. That's great.
And, you know, talking about dishes, you know, we use sustainable products. We use Earthwise dishwashing not liquid, but you know, the granules, we don't use anything toxic. So that's okay. So the power is sustainable. So is what we're using is biodegradable, because we don't want to destroy our little worm farm that we have out there.
So let's talk about that, because the wastewater that's leaving the property, obviously you've got to have a system yourself.
Septic. We live in the Wop Wop, so yeah, we don't have a sewer system, a town sewer system. So we had to, obviously, we're in the area of ECAN, Environment Canterbury, so we had to go through Environment Canterbury. We chose a system and they had to certify that. So what we did is we chose a worm farm. My wife actually chose it in the end, so I'm not sure what the name of it. But it is like a pod, and it looks quite strange when it gets dropped, you know, when you see it. Sort of, it's like a round sort of
it's
pod. And it, what's amazing is that, you know, once it's in, that's it. You don't have to do an absolute thing. So no one has to empty it out. The worms do everything for you. So what you want to do is you don't want to hammer the worms. You want to give them, you don't want anything toxic in it whatsoever. So, you know, some shampoos are toxic, some soaps are toxic. All the cleaning equipment can be really, you know, the cleaning products can be very, very toxic. So you don't want any of that. So we don't use any of those. And I've told the council and so on, I came and had an inspection here. I said, I'm not using anything toxic. And they said, yes, fine. So they gave me certain products that we can use. So we use all of those.
But Patrick, if you've got people coming in, maybe more at the weekends and less at the week, how do the worms cope with that?
Oh, I think the more food they have, they breed. You know, what actually happened in the beginning was there was nothing in the tank. Okay, so people arrived and, you know, we washed dishes and food and bits of food scraps went down there. They went to the toilets and bits of, you know, whatever went down. And then we created their food. So the company from Omaru High Flow Plumbing came in and they put a bucket of worms directly into the septic tank. Okay. So what was in the tank after a while was the food for the worms.
So when was this? How many? Was this a few years ago or?
It was, when did we open this lodge up? About 15 months ago. Okay. And it's just, I have no problem with it at all. It's been fantastic.
But you check on it every now and again?
I every day. Oh. Because I'm emptying all these portaloos that we have in, and I go down to the septic tank every day.
And have a look in and
well, I'll pour the contents in, and then I have a look in and just check that it's all okay.
Yeah.
So I don't, I just take that little back. I don't do it every day, but I actually go to the septic tank every day. And then you can just open it up and just have a quick look and see, oh, it's all functioning fine. Right. Because you have to do that. It's just the last thing I want is a system that's not going to work when my guests are in here. So I have to check it. Yeah.
So you've had no problems, so that's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. So, you know, it's like any, even in cities, funny enough, the anaerobic and aerobic bacteria, it's a natural process of breaking down their solids. So, you know, they also, in cities also use the, you know, a natural process. But sometimes the, you know, you might get some toxic waste coming through the system, and you do a lot because people just chuck whatever they want down in the system. It can suppress the bacteria in the system in the city's you know, sewer treatment process. So we are just a very, very small size system similar to that, but we use worms instead. And we'll still have the anaerobic and aerobic bacteria there because that naturally occurs.
Right, but do you talk to the guests about, because I guess if people go and use the bath, that water would then go through the system, would it? The bath water?
The bath water is just plain hot water. There's nothing else that's down there.
But you don't say people like, please don't bring your own, you know, special bubbly stuff and stick it.
I do. Yeah. I let them know because in the showers there's Earthwise liquid soap. There's actually a hand wash that's also Earthwise. I said, please use that above your own personal products because we have a worm farm set. And they go, ooh.
So. And in fact, I think because you've got living creatures in there, it's not just a system, you know what I mean? People think, well, you don't want to kill all these worms.
Well, you don't want to. You know, you want the worms to thrive because they're doing a wonderful job. I mean, they, you know, I have to probably, because I'm an engineer myself, roading engineer, and I've learned a bit about sewer and water systems and all that. You have to praise the engineers for, you know, the systems they install in cities and towns. Without them, you wouldn't be able to live in them. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. So it is the engineers that create towns and cities as a livable space on the planet, point blank. That's what it is. You've got to thank them for that. And then the people that maintain them, you know, and I'm the same here with my system in a small way. I have to look after it because I have to look after my guests. And that's my job. So, baby, my studying over the years and that type of thing has come into fruition. I don't understand it.
Because you're very aware of the underlying, the necessity of the system to to allow people to, be healthy.
Absolutely. To have a system that is healthy, we have no issues with people getting sick. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why we have to use these products and we have to be totally aware of it.
Have you got time to talk about the materials, the construction? You've tried to do a lot of reused materials.
Yes, absolutely. We could. I mean, we had to look at when we put it up. We had to look at a few things. There's a maintenance issue. There's a time issue in related to maintenance, and then there's also a thing of, hey, where do we get materials that have the least impact on the environment when you're building it? So what we try to do is we used local builders and we used local material as far as we could. And then we also looked at the building and we wanted to do as lowest maintenance as possible and also to create a building with what we wanted to try and create. Like I said before, was, you know, like a flash high country little hut somewhere. So what we did on the outside was to use corrugated iron, which simulates...
This is on the main, the lodge, the main what lodge. You call the lodge.
That's correct. So we use corrugated iron because it's maintenance-free. So there's an actual environmental
impact. And it's endlessly recyclable, you know, steel.
That steel's recyclable, and then there's the maintenance thing, and, you know, maintenance is actually can have a huge impact on the environment as well. So we don't have any maintenance on it. So there's a good thing. There's a big tick, okay? So that was the outside. And it's basically all is the outside is corrugated iron, but then it also gives it a hut feeling. So it was the right product for that. And then the inside we used EcoPly, we used macrocarpa, and then we used a lot of timber where we could actually recycle. We could use all the fencings macro, and the macrocarpa comes from just across the river in a place called Waimate. That's the closest timber mill to us, and then the macrocarpa is not treated. It actually is a It has its natural oils in it, so it's a really good product. And so that's why we used macrocarpa from a, you know, from a maintenance point of view, as well as, hey, it's just down the road. So it doesn't have much of an impact. So that's how we did things. And there's, you know, the decking at the front is my mum-in-law's old sheep shearing shed. It's sheep grading. And then the poles out there from the old power poles that we're taking out to replace just down the road from us, so we grabbed those and we used those as posts. And all on the deck, you'll see the front posts, all old power poles. All our steps out here from old hardwood from my father-in-law's farm, which is down the road, he gave it to us, we used that. Cross beams for the table outside, we used that. Around our shelving, we've got strips of timber. That's an old gate that we cut up around there. Around the fire hearth, that's stone from just here on, off our property. And there's all bits of timber that we used that we had here. Yeah. So we just used it.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We did as much as we could.
And what about the tents themselves? So you've got a couple of different styles.
We've got geodesic domes. Now, there's no place in New Zealand that produces that. So we had to get it from good old China. And we found that was the best option for us. Now, the domes are wonderful. We put them in because they're really wind resistant, and they're very strong and durable. So when you look at that, that product's going to be around for a long, long, long time. And inside the domes, we don't have any power there because we want people to, you know, you're camping. So we don't want power in that. And we don't have internet. We don't have Wi-Fi. Yeah, we don't want that because you need to get away from that. You need to be with nature. This is what it's all about. It's really just to be here with nature.
That's
it. And have a bit of peace because our lives are too busy. And in the tents, we have rechargeable batteries in our little lights, and I charge them from the solar. I have a little recharger, and I charge them up. And then we're as sustainable as we can at the moment, but we can become more and more sustainable.
Thanks for listening to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, and today on the show I was chatting with Patrick Terrell from Valley View's Glamping. Now, if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. Eco Living in Action is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you are able to tune in again next week.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. Is there affect our city? Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.
your